Greetings. Greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. This is the show. It's the one. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, and we don't wear any lapel pins. Not a single lapel pin in view here. We were watching the NASA Amorphis mission, though, on Monday night. Anybody else get to see that? Where they crashed a perfectly good satellite into an asteroid. Amorphis. It's part of NASA's... I think it's a legitimate responsibility of the government to try to figure out a way to redirect an asteroid if the asteroid presents a threat to the Earth. I think that's a legitimate function of government. And so I think it's a legitimate mission, but I don't think they know what they're doing. Anyway, we'll talk about that more on this week's episode of Real Science Radio on KLTT AM 670 radio in Denver and over at realscienceradio.com. We're going to talk about the DART mission to Amorphis, some predictions about what would happen made by creationists we'll just talk about that. I don't want to give it away. But creationists, we make predictions about science and then they come true, and the atheists say that we're not scientific. That's because they are superstitious and they're involved in a superstitious religion. We're actually involved in science. Creation is scientific. In fact, creation is the reason science exists. If it wasn't for creation, there could be no reason. If it wasn't for a creative God who created everything, there could be no reason, which means there could be no science, which means all of you people, you atheists, you're the ones who are religious fanatics. All right. We'll talk about other stuff, too. Some new information that confirms the idea that the crust of the earth was originally founded upon water. Pretty cool. Yeah, we will also be promoting the Real Science Radio Telethon over at Real Science Radio, because over there they have a budget and they have a staff and they have all kinds of bills to pay. Here at the Weekly Worldview, we don't have any of that, because this is just a part-time gig for me. Just a way for me to rant and get it out so that I don't strangle someone in traffic. That's what this show is about. Real Science Radio, on the other hand, is an actual ministry that requires support. And so if you listen to me, go check out Real Science Radio and give some money for the telethon. Sponsor the show is what you should do. Sponsor one show a month, for crying out loud. How difficult is that? Okay, so we'll get back to that. And then where do I want to start? Do I want to start at the funeral? I'm getting older, and so I'm going to more and more funerals. And it astonishes me that an atheist can get older and older, and that just the sheer accumulation of funerals, you would think, eventually would get their attention. But apparently, it's as if it hardens them. Isn't that weird? As I see more and more funerals, I think more and more about eternity. But maybe it's the opposite for Mick Jagger and Keith Richards and Hillary Clinton. I mean, people are dropping like flies around them. They got to be getting a death. They got to be getting invited to a funeral every other day at this point. But still, nothing. Nothing registers. It's very, very strange. So anyway, I'll come back to the funeral maybe. I don't know. I may or may not address the funeral. I want to start on PBS. Was it Sunday night? I think it was Sunday night. Monday, I was watching the Amorphis. I was watching the NASA feed on Monday. And I watched I'll talk about that on Real Science Radio. I'm not going to talk about that here. Let's go over to PBS where Lucy Worsley, of course, with the obligatory English accent. In order to host a PBS program, one must have British accents. Actually, I think she was British, because the show that was on PBS was How the Black Death Changed England. And now, I already knew that the Black Death changed England mostly by killing one-third to one-half of the population. But Lucy Worsley over at PBS was positively giddy and excited when she mentioned the death of one-third to one-half of the population. She talked about half the population of England being wiped out and all the opportunities it created for the survivors, especially women and minorities and immigrants. It was really weird. So it's a PBS program examining the Black Death that brought in images from the most recent COVID hysteria as if the two could be conflated at all, which is ludicrous. But she did. She basically used the Black Death to justify the hysterical, cowardly flip out that we just experienced with COVID, number one. And number two, PBS and Lucy Worsley used the backdrop of the Black Death wiping out a third of the world, pretty much. Maybe a half. We don't really know. They basically used that as the backdrop to justify the coming Great Reset. And how the Black Death was so wonderful in overthrowing the patriarchy and liberating women. Yeah, the ones who didn't die. And how just how great it was for the economy. There were all kinds of economic opportunities, all these job openings, because everyone was dead. Anyway, it was really creepy, weird, and demented, and demonic, and satanic, and I was quite disturbed by it. I highly recommend you watch it. Lucy Worsley examines How the Black Death Changed England and other fun stories from Grandmama. If you want to know how our enemy's mind thinks, watch this. It will creep you out. Listen to this. At the end of the program, Lucy said, quote, "If life is a dance with death, best to enjoy life is the lesson. Best to enjoy is the lesson. To eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die, and the rest." I mean, no one ever said that she was original or anyone at PBS was original. It's the same old thing. But it was quite disturbing. And every conservative should watch it. All right, so do I want to go to the news real quick before I get to another, whatever you call that I just did? We'll go to the justice file, where U.S. Navy sailor Ryan Sawyer Mays was found not guilty this past week, not guilty of arson in the fire that consumed the U.S. Navy ship, the Bonhomme Richard. I think they call it the Bonnie Dick is what the crew called it before it burned to the ground. Well, burned to the sea. Anyway, burned beyond recognition. It was a total loss. The ship caught on fire and in the midst of the COVID flip out. And since everyone was hysterical, they couldn't figure out how to put the fire out, and the ship literally burned to a total loss. And they tried to blame this guy, Ryan Sawyer Mays, which I may have assumed that he was responsible. As of now, the one thing I noticed, because I watched the trial all week, they had a little update on the news each night on the local news just before the weather. And I noticed that this guy was going in and out of court every day, not wearing a mask, which led me to believe this guy might not be guilty because of my axiom that I have established that we know the guilty in court now because they all wear masks. All the judges and all the lawyers wear masks because they're all guilty all the time and they know it. But when it comes to the defendant, we now have an accurate barometer of guilt or innocence, whether or not they wear the mask. This sailor was not wearing a mask, which is just another piece of evidence that he may not have been guilty. Well, there's also the jury said he wasn't guilty. I'm sorry, not the jury, the judge. This is not a jury trial, it's a judge. The judge said there wasn't enough evidence, none of the DNA matched, nobody could really give any testimony, there wasn't any physical evidence. There was a little bit of circumstantial evidence, but not as much as anybody thought. And I never heard anything in the trial about the news articles I read that it was a boyfriend-boyfriend type thing. There was nothing, none of that. So this all may have been the Navy just trying to, this may have been the deep state trying to cover itself for gross incompetence and blame it on some guy. And looking at the behavior of the deep state, of which, ladies and gentlemen, the military is one of the deepest parts of the deep state. It just happens to not have been run by maniacal leftist psychopaths up until maybe the last 10 years. And so there was a bastion of conservatism within the deep state, and that was in the military. But over the last, I don't know, decade or so, the military's been purged of anyone patriotic and conservative, replaced by queers and freaks and demented leftists and quota hires and every other kind of leftist bilge, naval reference there. And so this could have been just the Navy covering for itself. Let's blame this guy because we couldn't figure out how to put a fire out on a ship, which is like, that's all they do in the Navy, is practice putting fires out on ships. At least that's what I was told by my buddies in the Navy. That's all they did. Eat, sleep, and practice putting out fires. And when it came to nutcracking time there on the Bonnie Dick, they couldn't figure it out. That's pretty embarrassing. But the sailor, and it turns out he's probably not even a homo, which is, I'm sure that's unique in the Navy these days. As far as we know, Ryan Sawyer Mays is not a homo, and nor did he set the ship on fire, as far as we know. And he wasn't wearing a mask at court, so there you go. Now, I got an email from a listener, and I can't read it all because I just can't read it all because I don't have time. But it's called The Sad End of a Political Love, and it's from a listener who shall remain anonymous. But I get messages from this listener and many other billions of listeners, but I sorted this one out. He says, tonight, which I think was last night, I listened to Donald Trump from his own lips. Donald Trump said the following, quote, "I believe in abortion in the case of rape or to save the mother's life." I'm trying to do a New York rich guy accent, but I can't really pull that. I never could really do Donald Trump. Anyway, Trump said he believes in abortion for the case of rape or to save the mother's life or if it would be convenient to me. Oh, no way. I made that last part up. But that's what the first two parts imply. Anyway, my listener says, Doug, Trump saying this broke my heart. It flattened the curve of my hope for a political avenue for God to work a miracle in our nation. Abortion will never be willingly surrendered by this country. Once we open the door to self-murder by proxy, we close the door on any hope for the slaughter of innocents to end. That's pretty depressing. This guy could have been a prophet. We're reading through the prophets. A number of the reading Isaiah, Nathan, Jeremiah. The prophets were generally not happy with the situation. Generally speaking, they were not the power of positive thinking crowd. The prophets. And so here, my listener, I'm not going to say he's a prophet, but what he said is, well, it's prophetic. And then he goes on to say, Doug, I want you to know I still most likely will vote for Donald Trump for president, as we must have a country if we're going to win it back to God. Okay, so here's the thing. We don't have to have a country in order to win it back to God. We don't. In fact, I would posit that if we don't lose this country, we won't be able to win it back to God. I think we're beyond, we've gone over the edge in the barrel, so to speak, and America simply has to now be destroyed. And it's very sad. Don't get me wrong. I don't want that. It's been pretty good for me. But the institution itself is too corrupt and it has to be replaced. And so don't freak out and think I'm not patriotic. I mean, the people in Europe who had the Magna Carta, they thought they had it. They thought things were great. Well, something came along that was better. And who's to say, how can we know whether or not if America and the Constitution that we live under now or that we used to live under before whatever, who's to say when that's all destroyed and burned to the ground like the Bonnie Dick? I mean, who are you to say that something better won't come along? I could give a guitar analogy to that statement. You know, for those of us in the early 80s, when you heard Eddie Van Halen, you thought that was it. It couldn't get any better than that. But then Vito Bratta came along. And so the same thing could happen with America. Something better could come along. And voting for... that's... I mean, someone else came along and did it so obviously better. Okay. Well, it was obviously better. Just embarrassingly better, as a matter of fact. I mean, everything Eddie did with the pull-offs and the hammer-ons, Vito just perfected it, that's all.
Yeah.
Anyway, not that we have anything against Eddie Van Halen, who's assumed room temperature, and that's sad and all that. Kind of ironic, though, that he used to show off smoking that cigarette at the end of his guitar and then he dies of throat cancer. Man, death is often so embarrassing. Can you imagine how embarrassing it must have been for Eddie Lane in the hospital? All the years joking about smoking and... Well, maybe that got his attention. And just the sheer embarrassment of all that made Eddie Van Halen consider the creator and the living God who might could save him. I hope so. It'd be nice if Eddie Van Halen was in heaven and then Vito Bratta gets there and then we could have the battle of the guitars and they could look down on whoever ends up in hell, like all the guys from AC/DC, and they'd be laughing at him. They'd be like, who's the guitar player for AC/DC? That's embarrassing not to be able to remember that.
Angus Young.
They'll be looking down at Angus in hell going, who said all the best guitar players go to hell? Huh? Anyway, we can hope for that, right? Okay, let's see. So there we have the end of America. Something better could come. In fact, I would say, and I did, so I should shut up, but if America doesn't end and there's not a new wineskin, there will be no place to put the new wine. And you can have something to say about what replaces America. And in fact, I would predict that it will only be the Christians who have enough sanity and enough wherewithal after all this comes apart at the seams to put something back together that's serviceable. That's And so that's one of the reasons we're here and one of the reasons we kept our children out of the government schools and out of the pop culture. So that there will be somebody left. I would advise you to do the same with your children. Okay. Now, we go from the Bonnie Dick, America the Bonnie Dick, to the decline and fall file where the United States Air Force Academy this past week held a seminar promoting transgender visibility and awareness in our Air Force. Let's see. The discussion focused on, like, awareness for transgender communities. As it likely would, because it was a seminar promoting awareness, and it focused on awareness. This sounds like a Carmela Harris speech. It's all about awareness, and we plan to focus on awareness. Why? Because we're aware. It's the Air Force. Let's see. The Washington Free Beacon obtained a copy of an invitation to the awareness-focused awareness seminar regarding transgenderism. And the Free Beacon reports, critics say this type of training is part of a woke cultural agenda. And I want to stop the Free Beacon reporters right there. I do like the Free Beacon. But this is not a woke cultural agenda. This is criminal insanity. Criminal insanity is what it is. Emphasis on criminal. We need to stop winking and laughing and calling this anything cultural or calling it any kind of agenda. It needs to be pointed out for what it is. It's criminal. And these people need to be arrested. And some of them are in the highest reaches of the military and the government. And they need to actually be arrested. That's a pretty bad position to find oneself in. But it's not surprising with all we've let slide over the past century or so. Anyway, the Free Beacon reporters go on to say that this woke cultural agenda is being mainstreamed by the Democrat Party's far left flank. Where, and I have to stop them again. And again, I like the Washington Free Beacon. I get a lot of good news. I shouldn't say good news, and the news is rarely good, but accurate news from the Free Beacon. But it isn't just the Democrat Party's left flank anymore that's pushing this insanity, this criminal insanity. It's anyone who hasn't pushed back publicly and loudly with extreme prejudice against all this, which is most of the Republicans and almost all of the Christian church. They haven't pushed back loud and with extreme prejudice against this criminal insanity and called it what it is. So don't just blame, you can't just blame the Democrat left wing. This is the extreme left wing. No, this is most of the country. All right. So, you know, stop it with that. So you can't correct the problem if you don't first admit you have a problem. And so those of us who consider ourselves part of conservatism or patriotism or the right or whatever you want to call yourself, if you don't consider yourself hard left, well, then you need to look in the mirror and realize that we have the problem. We're laughing and winking and acting as if these criminally insane, maniacal children destroying the country, hell-bent on killing themselves and our children, are anything less than criminal. And it's time to stop. It's our problem. It's our fault at this point if we let the insane children kill us. That's our fault. Let's see. Anything else from this story about the awareness-focused seminar promoting transgender awareness of transgender visibility? To make people aware. The final sentence of the Free Beacon article. The first 40 cadets to attend the seminar received a free lunch. Okay. Wow. First of all, don't cadets already get a free lunch? I mean, they're in the military, aren't they? So I don't know. I remember when I was in the military, one thing I didn't worry about was lunch. And you couldn't get my attention with a free lunch because I already had a lunch waiting for me every day at the chow hall. But maybe the military's different now. Maybe since it's a petri dish for transgender experiments, social experiments, that they stopped giving the troops food. I don't know. And by the way, one thing I learned a long time ago, there's no such thing as a free lunch. Somebody has to pay for everything. And so for the reporters at the Free Beacon to use the term free lunch, it just shows a certain level of cultural vacuity that has infested the reporters and the news media in general. And it's the urinalism schools that have urinated out all these urinalists. And it's just sad and embarrassing. It's all right. Now, from there we go. Let's see. We're not going to do the funeral. Maybe I'll get to the funeral later. Let's go to the politics file in lieu of the funeral because we want to keep things upbeat. The New York Post is reporting that 30 former FBI agents, including a retired deputy assistant to the traveling manager. I'm sorry. I meant the deputy assistant director, head of counterterrorism, and five former SWAT team members, all of these former FBI agents, are now speaking out publicly in support of suspended FBI whistleblower Stephen Friend. Their heartfelt message, according to the New York Post, shows anguish about the politicization of the FBI. A heartfelt message from the former deputy assistant to the traveling manager over there at the FBI. And so does anybody get what's happening here? Besides me, is anyone else paying attention? You have a heartfelt message from a bunch of retired people about the agency that they led and the agency that feathered the nest of their retirement. And they wouldn't stand up and say anything until after their resignation. If their message was heartfelt, they would have spoken up before with a... Did I say resignation? I meant retirement. I meant retirement. I'm sorry. I see. I'm thinking resignation. If these people actually cared about the FBI and they cared about whistleblowers, they would have stood up before their retirement was funded and resigned. But they didn't. So this is not heartfelt. This is a half-hearted post-retirement message on behalf of a guy who's actually being persecuted in real time and will lose his retirement and could end up in prison. In fact, he's taking on the FBI. He could end up dead. And all of these cowards, now they want to stand up and say, oh, the FBI is terrible, horrible, awful, now that they've got their pension. It's disgusting. A nation cannot survive a generation of cowards. And that's what we've got. The Post goes on here. Many former agents hailed the whistleblower, Stephen Friend, as a hero. And they should know. They should recognize a hero because they're not heroes. So when one comes along, he stands out to these cowards. Stephen Friend was punished for refusing to participate in SWAT raids over January 6th misdemeanors. So here he is, the guy I've been looking for. I said, how could these people do this? Well, here's a guy who didn't. And all of the people who've watched the FBI become a cesspool of politicization over the past 10 years, half their careers, most of them, they're all saying, golly, Shazam, this guy's a hero, as they go cash their pension checks. It's disgusting. Friend has alleged that the FBI, Stephen Friend, the whistleblower, has alleged that the FBI has been manipulating case file management in order to falsely inflate the threat of domestic terrorism and using unconstitutional excessive force against political dissenters, force that he refused to participate in. Here we've got the Terry Turchi, the former deputy assistant to the traveling manager over there at the FBI, describes Friend as a model example of what FBI agents nationwide should be and what I could have been had I not been such a slack-jawed, cowardly loser. Oh, and I made that last part up. That's he says, I am beyond proud to offer him my support in the decision he had to make. I am beyond losing my cushy pension, so I can say that now. It's just making me sick. All right. I'm not going to beat a dead horse. We honor Stephen Friend, the guy at the FBI willing to stand up and say, no, I won't do that, and throw his badge on the table. So the last man standing. And of course, the last man standing at the FBI means you're out. I am your host, Doug McBurney, and my extremely attractive audio engineer. Must be psychic, because she knew. We hope somebody got Prince's attention before he overdosed in that elevator there with the fentanyl. Or was it propofol? I forget which one. Well, I think they found him in an elevator. Again, a very embarrassing situation, I'm sure. You're one of the most famous, good-looking people on the planet. You end up in an elevator with your own urine and other bodily fluids. It's just embarrassing. So you would hope somebody got his attention before the unfortunate fentanyl or propofol. Was it Michael Jackson with the propofol? Anyway, I always get those two confused, fentanyl and propofol. I think Michael Jackson was doing the propofol. But let's leave that aside. Because instead, we're going to go out to the Black Sea, where Vladimir Putin could learn a thing or two about sabotage and fake elections from Barack Obama. And George Soros and Michelle Obama's mom, who I think when it all comes out, we're going to find out she was the one actually running the country. That's why things have gone so historically badly over the past 15 years. It's because Michelle Obama's mom's actually been in charge. She's running George Soros, right? Soros thinks he's in charge. No, it's Michelle Obama's mom, and we don't even know her name. It's the perfect caper of historic proportion. It's Michelle Obama's mom, the nameless force behind everything black, dark, and evil. And by black, I don't mean African-American. I mean black in the sense of evil. All right. Putin set up the election over there in the Donbass, eastern Ukraine, and the results were 99.9295% of the electorate wants to join Russia. Vladimir, this is not the way to do it. No, that's Barack would be Vlad. But the thing is you want to make it look not so obviously fake, like we did in 2020. I mean, yes, with the closing of the windows and the kicking out of the counters, and there was some things that were fairly obvious for people who were paying attention. But here's the thing, Vlad. Most people aren't paying attention. Plus, we had the media on our side, so all we had to do was make it not look like an obviously fake election. I mean, we could have had 99.9785% of the people vote for, what's his name? Biden. We could have had that. But we're professionals here, Vlad. Anyway, so Vlad could take some lessons from Barry and Michelle's mom on how to set up a fake election. And then about sabotage, well, anyway, we'll get to some of that because I think we'll talk about the Nord Stream, I think. But first, we're going to go to reason number 1,998. To get or keep your children out of the government schools. This should be 1,999 because 98 should be there has to be someone left who's not insane and who's not completely corrupted and polluted by the pop culture in order to save America from the barbarians at the gates whenever this country is finally and mercifully put out of its misery. The institution, I mean. But reason number 1,999, teachers out in Columbus, Ohio, have welcomed back students with lessons on, other lessons on, so teachers in Columbus have welcomed back students with lessons on deviances and perversions so disgusting I can't say on the air what they're teaching the kids. I can't say it. Badges worn by teachers in the Columbus, Ohio suburb featured QR codes linking to a website with information on gender identity, body positivity, and a guide on queering sexual education. That guide was a pamphlet with instruction on, well, I can't say that. And, I don't even know what this is. There's three things on here. I don't even know what they are. And I was in the service, folks. I've been around the world, and there's stuff on here that they're teaching the kids in school that I'm not even familiar with. That's how outside of the grotesque, freakish, that's how crazy things have gotten. Is that, an ex-serviceman who went around the world and hung out with the military and even the Navy, for crying out loud. I don't even know what some of this stuff is. But that's what that's reason number 1,000. Well, and that's just in Columbus. Out in Utah and Idaho, students were encouraged to attend an all-ages drag show. And there was all-ages bingo out in Portland as the kids came back to school. Up in Michigan, teachers had a meeting to discuss how to conceal information from parents, including pronouns that the kids go by at class. That kids may or may not go by. Nobody's saying anything. That's in Michigan. In Chicago, schools, the school partnered with the local hospital to promote. I can't say that. You can't say that in the same sentence with kids. I think that's a crime. To say what that just says right here, I think it's criminal to say that. So I'm not going to say it. But they're promoting something with kids that's criminal, okay? Programs to facilitate. Okay, I don't think you can say that in the context of people under 18 without it being a crime. So I'm not going to say it. But and then finally, folks, in New Jersey, students were welcomed back with a mask mandate. So that's where we are. The least offensive and criminal thing going on in the public schools is that some of the hysterical, insane teachers are still making the kids wear masks. And that's the least of our problems. The rest of it is criminal. The teachers in New Jersey maybe shouldn't be arrested for making the kids wear masks because they're just a bunch of hysterical cowards. But the rest of them, With the pamphlets and the links and the QR codes, they're criminals. They should all be arrested. So reason number 1,999 to get or keep your children out of the government schools because the people running the schools should be in jail. They're criminal. They're a bunch of sex criminals. All right. That's not to put too fine a point on it. I don't want to make anyone sending your kids to the public schools feel bad. Certainly wouldn't want to do that. You're just sending your kids somewhere where they'll be raped by sexual maniacs and criminal deviants. Everything's okay, Mom. It's okay, Dad. All right, that was reason number 1,999. Now we go to the war file where this is a reason number I forget. I think this was 667 back when we first started the list. The fact that your child could be shot or killed. Yeah, I think that started. That was 667. But NBC Philadelphia is reporting that a teenage boy was killed and four others injured in a shooting behind Roxborough High School neighborhood there in Philadelphia last Tuesday afternoon, broad daylight. Car drove by and a gunman fired at least 70 times as they ambushed a group of students. We have a message here from the district. The district? Okay. So we'll just, since there's no person involved, we'll just assume a persona for the district's message to students, which is, quote, a school-based team of social workers and counselors will be on site in all impacted schools to support students and staff as they process and grieve this tragedy. Unquote. Oh, actually, that was Superintendent Tony. Tony is spelled maybe with an I, maybe with a Y. You're not allowed to know. And Tony has he, she, her, him pronouns. And is the superintendent very concerned? All right, now we have an action. That was a statement released by the the district. And now, I see. And then we have a statement, an actual statement from Superintendent Tony with the he, she, her, him pronouns. I am personally disturbed and angry with this senseless act of violence. And it is unacceptable, said Superintendent Tony. He, she, her, him. Really, is it unacceptable? Superintendent, because unacceptable means that you take action to stop it. That's what unacceptable means. Uh-huh. And that would start with calling for the death penalty of these perpetrators. That would be the first step in convincing me you think this is unacceptable. But it's not unacceptable. I have a hard time believing it's unacceptable, Mr. Superintendent, because, I mean, unacceptable. Okay, talking back to the teacher, that's unacceptable. But we're talking about an ambush massacre. That's not unacceptable. That's evil. But it's unacceptable. You've led your school district to a place where it's acceptable because it just happened. You better accept it. It just happened. But a massacre, an ambush massacre of students, that's evil. And by the way, this wasn't a senseless act of violence, you moron. It seems like the people driving in the car with the guns thought it out quite a bit. They planned it. It was... all right. So it's actually sensible and acceptable is what this is now. Massacres in the government schools are actually sensible and acceptable and not surprising at all. And they're the direct result, Mr. Superintendent Tony, with the he, she, him, her pronouns. They are the result of you and your entire career is why this is happening. Because you don't have the wisdom to call for an end to this violence by putting to death anyone who would do this, trying them swiftly, and punishing them painfully. You don't even know that that's an option, so... Okay, so we move on deeper into the war file where we have another school shooting. A gunman opened fire, killing 17 and wounding 24 before shooting himself dead. So the urinalist could have said a gunman killed 17 people and wounded 24 before killing himself, but that's not what the urinalist said. The urinalist said the gunman opened fire and then shot himself dead. There's no killing. See, you're not allowed to say that in urinalism anymore. Because nobody's really responsible for anything because we can't really be sure that anyone's responsible for anything or that anything's even real. Because we might be living in a multiverse or a simulation, a computer simulation. And if we were to imply that anything was real, that could be embarrassing later when it comes out that this was all a simulation. At which point, of course, nothing will matter because nothing's real. But let's not think it through like that. All right. So the urinalist is trained to emphasize the shooting, not the killing. Why is that? Because it's an insidious shifting of the language in order to weaken the minds of the people so that the socialist dictators who've been waiting in the wings for all of human history, they've just been waiting to pounce. It's so that they can pounce on the weak-minded and the stupid, which at this point is almost everyone reading this article because nobody notices this insidious little shift. Just going to make you a little more stupid today so that eventually enough stupid is on you that we can just pounce and take everything you have and enslave you and rape, destroy, and eat your children, which is what they want to do. Maniacs. This school shooting, by the way, took place about 600 miles east of Moscow in Russia by a 34-year-old former graduate of the same school. He was wearing a black T-shirt. 17 people, including 11, were killed in the shooting. Huh? Yeah, there it is again. This is the Associated Press, the premier storage facility of the urinalist's products. 17 people, including 11 children, were killed in the shooting? They should put a question mark at the end. That would be all right. Anyway, but to get to the heart of the reality here, what is it with Caucasians and mass murder suicide? What's the deal? I mean, this is Russia, but it's Russia, America. What's the deal with Caucasians and mass murder suicide? I guess this is just more evidence that godlessness, pornography, and video games in the modern culture know no borders. It's the Weekly Worldview. That's right, we're running out of time, and I want to get to the funeral if I can get through all this news, because I want to talk about the funeral. It's my latest of hopefully many funerals to come. How do you say that? I don't want to die, so I hope I have a lot more funerals before mine. Or do I? I don't know. It's a hard thing to say, because I don't want to go to any of your funerals out there. So I'm present company accepted. I hope I have a lot of funerals. I don't know. And we go to the war file where the sabotage of the Nord Stream pipelines, according to the authors at the Federalist, they say it will likely mark a turning point in the Russo-Ukrainian war. The Russian's foreign ministry says that it looks like an act of terrorism, possibly on a state level. Possibly? That's being diplomatic, because only a state could do what was done to the Nord Stream pipelines. I mean, a state or an alliance of states, maybe an alliance of Northern Atlantic states, possibly, maybe, do you think? Anyway, why do I think NATO did it? Because NATO has declared the demolition an act of deliberate sabotage, says NATO. And they should know. Yeah. The Federalist reports that what we do know is that after more than 7 months of fighting, the war is not going well for Moscow. Ukrainian forces are supplied and actively supported by the United States to the tune of $67 billion so far in weapons and aid and probably troops. Russia is now set to annex eastern Ukraine, mobilizing some 300,000 reservists for Russia's first mass mobilization since World War II. That should get our attention. And Vladimir Putin has warned he's willing to use nuclear weapons. So things are escalating. Escalating, says the author at the Federalist. To accomplish the total defeat and regime change in the Kremlin, the U.S., says the author at the Federalist, will likely have to get directly involved. We're already directly involved. And I think that it's possible that the thing the Democrats are trying to position to distract from the November elections is World War III and quite possibly thermonuclear catastrophe. I know that sounds pretty, I don't want to be labeled a conspiracy theorist. Is it possible that the Democrat Party would be willing to kill tens of millions of people to stay in power? I think, yes, that is possible. And I think they feel like they are shielded from the potential for thermonuclear destruction because they think they can nuke the Russians faster than the nukes than the Russians can nuke us. Or maybe they're just willing to take a risk. Maybe they're even willing to die. After all, I think it's a murder-suicide sex cult that they're all involved in. And so, maybe them dying isn't really... I mean, it's murder-suicide, after all. All right, from there we go to Iran. The death toll in Iran is approaching 100 people. This latest crackdown by the Iranian mullahs over street protests following the death of a Kurdish woman, Mahsa Amini. The morality police had her in custody, and they beat her to death. I'm not going to say they allegedly beat her to death or that she died in a beating. I'm going to say that the morality police in Iran beat her to death because we know that they beat women to death. If they didn't beat her to death, then there should be riots in the streets for all the other women they've beaten to death. And they did beat her to death. Anyway, Germany has summoned their ambassador. Canada has announced sanctions. The European Union has deplored all this. Video proves live ammunition is being leveled against the protesters. They're running street battles. Students have torn down pictures of Ayatollah Khomeini. Ooh. Yeah. It's Iran's biggest protest in 3 years. In 3 years, I read this and I'm like, really? So I went searching to find that update and I found our headlines from January 2018, February of 2020, October now. Similar headlines. A challenge to the regime. The Iranian regime clings to power. It's like, how does this regime stand? How is it that they can still be in power? It's almost as if the mullahs made a deal with the devil. I mean, they were there at the same contract signing as the guys from AC/DC and the Rolling Stones, and they made their deal with the devil, and somehow they managed to survive. I don't know. Anyway, so from there we go to the politics file where the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas was volunteered to testify before the January 6th show trial. How do you know it's a show trial? They postponed all testimony for the hurricane. I found that odd. They were supposed to have testimony on Monday, but because the hurricane was coming through, they postponed. Now, the hearing was in Washington. The hurricane was in Florida. So how is it that the hurricane, and nobody had to, like, fly from Florida? It's because the news media would be focused on the hurricane, so they canceled the hearings because it's all a show. And, you know, when there's another headline act in town, you don't want to go on. So, but then they, Ginny Thomas, the wife of Clarence Thomas, went in front. Why? Well, because staff leaked messages. This is according to the Federalist. Staff leaked messages between her and former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows. And I'm reading the article. I'm like, whose staff? Her staff? Her staff leaked her text messages? Or was it Mark Meadows' staff? Who leaked the text messages? Just says staff. I guess we don't know. I'm going to assume it was Ginny Thomas's staff. Why? Because the left is insidious. And anyone, if you're in politics or in public life, anyone who you haven't known your whole life, who you think is your friend, will probably stab you in the back. So Ginny Thomas probably hired someone in Washington who leaked her texts. And it's just, anyway, Thomas in the text message urged Meadows to stand firm as President Trump was contesting the results of the 2020 election. Here's a quote from the text. You are the leader, Mr. Mark Meadows. You're standing for America's constitutional governance at the precipice. Biden and the left is attempting the greatest heist of our history. She wrote that in a text. to the president's chief of staff. And then that was leaked. Anyway, the message, all of the messages. Oh, and then Mark Meadows turned over his phone voluntarily to the communists, barbarians at the gates there at the January 6th committee, because he's a coward. The messages show Ginny Thomas used her access to Trump's inner circle to seek to overturn the election results. Good. So someone at least high up, at least the wife of someone high up, had the sense to look at what was happening and realize this is obvious they're stealing the election. Anyway, when the president lacks any men of courage around him, well, Mark Meadows, Mike Pence, Mitch McConnell, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, all of them, the entire Republican leadership. They were at the very least relieved that Trump lost the election, if not involved in stealing it. All of the guys I just mentioned, from Mike Pence on down, they were either relieved or involved. And Ginny, the wife of the Supreme Court, she just happened to notice that Brutus had snuck up behind with a knife. That's all. And she put it in the text message. So she ends up in front of the committee because she said something obviously true, which you're not allowed to do anymore. And that takes us to the end of the world file, where a convicted sex offender in Chicago is accused of attempting to kidnap a woman and committing aggravated battery against two other women in Chicago. This was after he was convicted of raping children. How is he out kidnapping and harassing? How is he even breathing? Oh, I forgot. The justice system that the Republicans who are lamenting the justice system they built is producing its natural order of product right here. A convicted sex offender out on the loose, kidnapping and battering women. 24 hours before the most recent attacks, the suspect was released by a judge on his own recognizance. Why? Because that's what we do with people who rape children or women or anyone. If you rape someone, you could get out of jail. So Quavon Ewing, a 32-year-old maniac who should be dead, instead he's out raping and battering, and he was finally arrested last Tuesday and charged with whatever. And, of course, that was last Tuesday. He might be out already. He might have bailed out. And if he hasn't bailed out, he certainly will be out after serving some length of time before being returned to the playground by the teachers. I mean, it's all the children are insane. And by the children, I mean the adults, the teachers, so to speak. The people ostensibly in charge are insane children. And all the children are insane. It's as if Jim Morrison was possessed by Satan and prophesied the end of America in the song when he sang about all the children are insane. It's as if it was a satanic prophecy. As if. From there, we now go to, should I do the funeral? I don't want to do the funeral. The justice system, let me see here. What do I have? We've got the fat, drunk Democrat who ran over the good-looking Republican kid. They finally arrested him. So the guy runs the kid over, tells the police, I think he's part of a Republican extremist group, and he was calling people to come and get me. I mean, I read the guy's statement to police. The guy admitted he hit him. The guy admitted he hit him with his truck because he thought he was part of a Republican extremist group. That's in his statement to the police. And then he bails out on $5,000, well, $50,000 bond. But for any of you who've been arrested, you know that you can get out for 10% at the local bail bond. So for $5,000, the guy who runs over the 18-year-old kid, he gets out of jail. And, of course, that's at the point where the conservative industry media, Hannity and the rest, that's where they go. They went wild. Uh-huh. Yeah. As Hannity and all the other mimeographed mainstream conservative media, they went wild when the guy bailed out. What do I mean by mainstream conservative media? What do I mean by the conservative industry media? That's any host wearing a lapel pin. Or if he has patriotic tattoos. That's another sign that he's an industry conservative. But the industry conservative hosts, they don't recognize that this is the justice system that they themselves call the best in the world. And it's the justice system that all the politicians they've promoted for the last 30 years, it's the justice system they've built. And it's a justice system where vehicular homicide takes many, many years to prosecute and you get out of jail for $5,000. It wasn't necessarily political. It wasn't because he ran over a Republican. It's because he ran over someone and killed him on purpose. And in America, you can bail out for about $5,000 on that. This is the justice system that Sean Hannity's politicians, that Rush Limbaugh's politicians, that the Mark Levin's politicians, and the rest of the guys, whoever they are with the lapel pins and now the patriotic tattoos. I'm sure Hannity doesn't have any patriotic tattoos. He does the lapel pins. It's the younger guys with the tattoos. Anyway, this is the justice system you built. So anyway, now finally, after reading the statement to the police, the prosecutor in North Dakota has finally actually charged this guy with murder, which is what that was. Yeah, it was murder. And so now the guy has turned himself in because in America, for murder, it costs a lot more to bail out. So we'll see if he has enough dough to bail himself out on the murder charge. And irregardless, it'll be years, if not a decade, before he actually goes to prison. And then he'll get out because of the justice system constructed by the politicians that the industry conservatives have elected over the past.
Let's hear the funeral.
Okay, yeah, I'll do the funeral. So I went to another funeral. No. Should we take a break first and then I'll do the funeral?
I don't know.
We could add a break. We're free to do that. It's a podcast.
Go ahead.
No? Okay. I thought maybe you wanted to.
You
want to hear about the funeral. So we attended a funeral at what I will call a corporate church. This is a church that is so large that it's obviously just a business, which to me now is pretty much any church over between about 30 and 100 people. It's a business at that point. And so the funeral was well attended. The lady was fairly elderly, so she had some friends in town. And so when you get there, was maybe 100 people there, maybe 150. When you get that many people there, guaranteed someone in the audience is not a Christian. That's all. It's just guaranteed. Run the numbers. And so the pastor, if you're running the funeral, it's your obligation at the funeral to assume that there's someone in the audience who doesn't know Jesus Christ and who's going straight to hell with jet rockets. And now I've got their undivided attention because they're looking up and we're all thinking about this person who just died. And so you've got people who are actually pondering their own mortality for a few minutes. And so it's the obligation of the pastor at that critical juncture to preach the gospel and to tell people that without Jesus Christ, you're lost. And Jesus Christ is the risen Savior of the world. He can save your life. He can save you from the hellfire and damnation to come and for which you may be headed. So let me tell you about Jesus Christ right now. Because through the whole funeral, they talked about what a great Christian woman this lady was. And that's wonderful. It's wonderful to mention that she was a great Christian woman, but I think also it's important to mention that she was a sinner. Every funeral, the person who's being lauded and praised as the greatest person with the greatest capacity for love and forgiveness of any person I ever knew, the greatest person I ever knew, the most wonderful, caring, kind, loved everyone. It should also be pointed out that that person is a sinner and saved by grace. And that's when you can tell people about Jesus Christ, because the unbeliever in the audience, they know that that person wasn't the most wonderful, caring, forgiving person because none of us are, and we all know it. So we shouldn't spend our time at a funeral just glad-handing each other and telling each other how wonderful this dead person is. No, the dead person was a sinner. And the only reason the dead person has any hope is because of Jesus Christ. But the corporate pastor here at the corporate church where they had the funeral, probably the weakest. You don't have to pray about this right now or even think about it right now, but maybe later. And now let me tell you, we have a sinner's prayer, and then he whispered his way through it. It was frankly embarrassing. And I feel bad that I didn't stand up and say something. Because, I mean, what do I care? I'll never see these people again. I should have probably stood up and said something. Like, look, she was a sinner saved by grace, and Jesus Christ is a risen Lord. And if you don't believe, then you're on your way straight to hell with jet rockets. Anyway, but that's the state of the church. The church is primarily a corporate entity in the business of paying salaries. It's not so much, and maintaining facilities. Don't, you know, we've got that. The ever important building programs and facilities maintenance costs that are the primary interest of the pastor. Not the saving of souls at the one moment when you've got the unbeliever's attention. Let's not disturb the business model with any of that. All right. Now, speaking of all that, so I want to close. But before we start the music, I don't know if I'll get through all this. So since I've gone long, I'm going to keep going for just a minute because I got a Just a System story from Las Vegas that gets back to, well, that, because of all of this failure and the bad news and the fact that the Donald Trump, the one hope for America, supports killing children. And the conservatives are left thinking their only option is to vote for that guy to try to save America. Voting for that guy is the mistake. That's why we've got it the way we've got it. Because every election, the conservatives tell me you have to, this is the one election, it's so important. Don't your moral values have to take a back seat to saving America. And we've done that now so long that we're gonna lose America. I hope I'm not repeating myself from last week. I feel like I've been repeating myself for 20 years. So here now, let's go to Las Vegas, where a convicted bomb maker escaped from prison and nobody knew for 4 days. He was gone for 4 days before the Nevada prison system realized he was gone. He was serving life for blowing a guy up. He blew a guy up in 2007. He blew him up outside of a Las Vegas strip resort. So listen. So a bomb goes off on the Vegas strip back in 2007. What's the government's first concern? Oh, it's terrorism. We're all worried it could be terrorism. Which, by the way, that is a vulnerability that America suffers. Our vulnerability to international terrorism is a vulnerability that is the fault of those governing officials who are scared every time a bomb goes off. It's their fault. That's why they're scared. They know they've led us to this. So it's a vulnerability for which they are responsible. So that's the first thing they were scared about, because a weak, corrupt government invites attack by international fiends and plotting terrorists. And they know that they're a bunch of corrupt government officials, so their first fear is, yeah, terrorism. But it turns out that this particular bombing turns out to be yet another murder related to another vulnerability that we all suffer, that's related to the government's permissive policies on fornication and adultery, which are the two leading causes of murder, fornication and adultery. Because what happened here was that this guy blew up the other guy because the guy was the boyfriend of his ex-girlfriend. And so he didn't like him. So what did he do? He set up a bomb and blew him up at a strip resort there in Vegas. I have a statement here from Governor Steve Sisolak.
No way.
That's his name, Steve Sisolak. It's a sissy who lacks... Well, I'll let you finish what he lacks, but he lacks, trust me. Under Governor Steve Sisolak, the guy who blew up another guy and killed him was in a medium security prison, serving life for blowing a guy up. And Sisolak lisped through a statement that included the phrase, "This is unacceptable," like the guy at school. Well, wait a second. I think maybe throwing a rotten tomato at you during a speech might be unacceptable, Governor Sisolak. But this is murder with a bomb, for crying out loud. It's more than unacceptable. It's evil. And the guy shouldn't have been in a medium security prison serving life. He should have been put to death. So that the next guy who doesn't like his ex-girlfriend's boyfriend doesn't think about blowing him up. Or maybe people won't fornicate with each other to the point that it produces so much death and destruction. By the way, fornication and adultery produce more deaths in America every year than terrorists, domestic or otherwise. And for that, the government is responsible. And why is the government responsible for that? Because the church allowed the government to do that. And so ultimately, the church is responsible, which ultimately means I'm responsible, which is why I'm standing up and I'm saying, this is unacceptable. In fact, this is criminal, what you people are allowing to happen. It's absolutely criminal what you people in the church and what you people in the government are allowing to happen, and it has to stop. Someone has to save you maniacs from yourselves in the name of Jesus Christ. Someone has to stand up and pull you maniacs, you criminally insane maniacs, back from the precipice to which you have dragged all of us and our children. Case in point from the Decline and Fall file. Marjorie Taylor Greene's husband has filed for divorce, and she appeared at Donald Trump's Save America rally last night as if everything's cool. That's right. The pair is asking the court to split their assets equally because it's fine. The pair has three children together over the age of 18. They married in 1995 while Marjorie was attending some university or another. And after announcing the divorce, both gave statements to TMZ because, well, welcome to America, circa 2022. The most conservative congresswoman on the planet is getting divorced and announces it on TMZ. She shared the message on TMZ, marriage is a wonderful thing and I'm a firm believer in it. Perry, my ex-husband, my future ex-husband, and I formed our family and, well, we were not able to carry it through. Because we're selfish cowards. Oh, wait a minute. I made up that last part. She said that she respects and believes in family. I'm sorry. I was the one who said she wasn't able to carry it through because her and her husband are selfish cowards. Let's see. The husband told TMZ, our family is our most important thing. And as we go on different paths, we will continue to focus on our three children almost as much as we focus on our own appetites and lusts and selfishness. Because that's, we're going to get divorced. And that's, by the way, this will be Marjorie Taylor Greene's greatest legacy to her children and to America. It will not be that she's a pro-life, Second Amendment, conservative Republican, a strong woman. It won't be that. It will be an object lesson in self-indulgence and weakness. A nation cannot survive a generation of cowards. And this is cowardly. And the church's failure to maintain marriage is, well, frankly, it's worse than our failures on the queers and the trannies and all the rest of the hard left stuff. The church's failure on marriage is bigger than all of that. In fact, the former failure on marriage is the root cause of the latter failure against the trannies and the queers and the freaks and the weirdos and the criminally insane. Uh-huh. So the church told Americans that we could all get divorced and know that God still wants us to be happy. That's what the church did. And that was a lie, and it's destroyed everything. And unfortunately now, the carcass of the institution has to be processed out before something new can be built. And so that's why we're here at the Weekly Worldview. And should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.